I'll tell you this much, Limits. I liked Arthur Smith so much that I want to hear some more. I do. We're going to get to Jeff Hathorne. He's at the Pat Narduzzi news conference. I'm on a way in with Jeff on the Backyard Brawl on all things Steelers Falcons and the Heather Like replacing Heather Like situation, all that. But I want to hear more of Arthur Smith. I'm very interested. I haven't heard him really interact with people a lot. And let's be honest, at least in my opinion, there's Steelers coach among coaches in Pittsburgh. Steelers head coach is number one highest profile. And in my opinion, Steelers offensive coordinator is number two, ahead of who's ever coaching the Penguins, ahead of who's ever managing the Pirates, let alone the college team. The coordinator is the second most scrutinized position in all of Pittsburgh coaching, in my not-so-humble opinion.
No, I would tend to agree with that because we saw this, the scrutiny and scuttlebutt around Matt Canada, Bruce Arians over the years, Ken Wisenhunt. I mean, they're known much more than defensive coordinators. Even when Dick LeBeau was here, the focus was always on the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I'm interested in getting to know Arthur Smith, at least by the means that we're currently, you know, hearing him, which is in his weekly media address after practice on Thursdays. That was just really interesting, what we heard before the break there, his explanation on the middle of the field being wide open because he wasn't going to deal with Jesse Bates at all, and how Bates texted him because they did get him once on that Pickens play deep at the end of the first half. Just good stuff. His explanation on what looked to be a horrible play, the little wide receiver screen, I guess you could call it, with Calvin Austin as one of your lead blockers. He said that was not a well-timed play. Shouldn't have been thrown out there. Should have been a moot point. But, you know, we get to make up our minds in the end. It still looked like that was the design should it come to what it came to. And it was horrific.
Man, I guess those Fields making a bad read is what Kabali pointed out on Twitter as well.
Well, that's what I mean. The ball,
yeah, it shouldn't be there.
The ball never should have gone out there. Which again, if you're an offensive coordinator, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't at these media sessions. Same as a quarterback, by the way, because if you tell the truth of how you saw a certain play and it implicates somebody else, then everybody's going to be listening to this guy throwing people under the bus. And then if you don't tell the truth and you just BS people, well, then you catch flack for that, too. You know what I mean? Like, come on, tell us what happened. What really happened?
Right. So it's good to hear. It's a good start. And, you know, Arthur Smith and Jesse Bates texting back and forth. He coached Bates last year. So obviously he knows everything that Bates is capable of. It makes sense because he had so much information and knowledge of the Falcons' defense as to what they did in terms of the middle of the field. And obviously the bad read by Fields in that equation. But overall, in terms of the offense, it's not worse than Matt Canada's last year. It's better. Now, how much better is still yet to be seen.
I'll reserve judgment on that as to whether it's better. Why do you already say it's better?
There were some things situationally that I liked, but, I mean, the ceiling was on the floor with the Matt Canada offense.
For sure, but we are coming off a game in which they scored zero touchdowns.
I'm not denying
that. They got a bunch of 50-plus yard field goals, or they might lose the game if their kicker has a bad day.
I think week one, it's kind of hard to judge with a lot of new pieces, new coordinator, new receivers, new quarterback, new line.
I'm not the one who made a judgment. You were.
I did.
We shall see.
I'm still passing judgment.
That's what we do on this show.
Here's Artie.
Two picks, almost got a third, fumble, forced fumble late. And the way the game was going, you know, we were able to stay ahead, and it allowed us to not try to let him affect it. He texted me, he said, you caught me sleeping right before the half. I said, yeah, you lull you to sleep. Get disinterested, and we set him up on that situationally. But he's a great player. And, you know, sometimes it's just very practical. You know, our Jason Bourne, T.J. Watt, wrecked the game. Theirs didn't, and that's kind of what the story of the game really was.
Do you have to take a similar approach with Pat Surtain?
It's different. Every player is great players every week. There's other great players on the field. I mean, Grady Jarrett's a great player, but, you know, like I said, the season Jesse has, again, I don't know why more people don't look at him as a top five player in this league. I certainly do. I've watched it live. There's always great players and matchups different. You know, sometimes it's a safety, sometimes it's an interior guy, it's an edge guy, maybe a backer that can destroy the games. Pat Surtain's certainly a great player. Corner, a little bit different, Cano want to give away strategy, but we're going to see. I'd imagine they're going to match him on George, which they did DK last week. They're going to see good on good. And at some point, you got to make a play.
Najee seemed to have the ball for the carries. Is that indicative of that game? Or is that
a little bit of the flow of the game. You know, Jalen didn't practice a lot. We had stuff for CP. I thought Naj came out running hard. I mean, I joked with him that play on the sideline. Now, you're talking about going bowling discipline. We got to cut out some of that stuff. Like, you know, that's a routine play. Naj is a big player. You get matched up on the corner, I'll take that every time. That should be routine plays. But that reminded me of some of the Derrick Henry runs that he finished off. A little bit was flow of the game, and a lot of it was because of Jalen, where we were using him situationally, not practicing a lot. And so we'll see how this week goes. You know, with the division of labor, those three.
What kind of trust is earned when you have a first game with a quarterback?
A lot. You know, a young player. Like, a lot of these guys don't get a chance to develop. In whatever situation they walk into, you look at a lot of the great players. You know, you don't put everything on their shoulders early on. Usually those guys become second contracts. You better be winning because of the guy, because he's taking most of your cap. And so a lot of it is the reps added up. He's got a good experience from his time in Chicago. But as a young player, I mean, some of these rookies, he's barely older than some of these rookies that are playing right now or that got drafted high. And those reps matter, and those are the things that build confidence. You build off winning, and there's always things we got to work on, myself included. Nobody's admit. We talk a lot about it, shared accountability. And that's real. And so that I was happy. You know, we talk about growth and, my zen almost came out. But handling situation, that's what the great players do. And so that was a step in the right direction.
George was a big part of your offense.
George will be a big part every week.
Yeah, so I was going to say, was there a concerted effort from a play calling perspective to get him the ball, or was that more what the coach dictated, or just his connection?
Well, a little bit of both, but, you know, you got guys like that. You want to get your hands in the best players, you know, the ball in the best players' hands, how you want to look at it. And the same thing, George is a young player. There's certainly things. You got details. Sometimes when the ball doesn't go to you as a wide out, the effect you have on that play. You know, it's about details and routes, you know. Again, and this isn't a blame game. It's just kind of just general philosophy, you know. Even on the two sacks, it wasn't like we got beat early or inside. And Grady made a play late, but we got to be cleaner with the detail. Because sometimes maybe the coverage gets you off the first read, or sometimes your detail gets you off the first read and you're holding the football, which is what the defense wants in obvious pass situations. But that's all the way across the board, and that's what we've got to take another step. We got to be more detailed and more disciplined, and we'll constantly work on that.
You mentioned the pass right before half that went to George. I was curious on that one. Was it designed for
Absolutely.
It to go back? Okay.
Yeah, that's what you call it. I mean, you know, that may not come up again. We have other plays in that situation where you are. You need a chunk play. How do you want to design it? You can't run the same thing over and over again, but the way the game was flowing a little bit, it was because of Jesse. I could watch him. That's why I like calling for the field. There's a psychology to it. As you're watching those guys, whether you get the rush frustrated or you get a great player frustrated, you know, next time we'll probably have something different. It'll be maybe a different scheme, but the coverage dictated it, and just the situation.
About doing different things with different packages. What is it about this group that makes three tight ends on the field at the same time something you think is advantageous?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, you think it's an advantage. You know, with their front, you know, there's different ways. You know, week to week it'll change, but certainly going into that week there was unknown. You know, they had a lot of five down, six down structures, so. Again, their safety pressure they showed, you know, they got us late with a couple edge pressures. You know, we got it, saw it clean a couple other times, but that's the game you're playing every week. But we felt good about our tight ends on their OLBs. And a little bit it was controlling the line of scrimmage. And we got big, strong tight ends that can do multiple jobs. I joke when you get in a combination with Darnell and one of our tackles, that's 650 pounds coming at you. So most of these OLBs aren't made to do that. But it'll change week to week, depending on schemes, matchups. But I thought they handled that part well.
What did you like or learn about Justin's decision-making in-state? I mean, you've obviously seen him in the preseason, but a little different in a regular season game.
Again, the flow of the game dictated some of it, too. And I told him, I said, like, even as a play caller, you know, before the third and two, fourth line, especially late, when there's no need to pick it up, you want to, because and this isn't, again, I'm contexting it because I don't want to, I got too much respect for them on the other side, but like, they got to do something there. Once we made them use their timeouts, you know what you're going to get. Nobody's going to sit there and play you in light coverage. So, you know, it's a 5-point game. You didn't want to pick it up because of the zero, and God forbid something goes wrong, even though you kind of know what they're in. You don't really want to kneel it. You know, Scotty had to go in there and hold it, so maybe you break a tackle 1-on-1 and stay in bounds, keep the clock going. So that's one part of that whole situation late as you're going through it with him. And I thought he was very disciplined. He didn't get greedy. When the shots were there and the opportunities were there, to your point that you brought up earlier, we took advantage of it. Again, it'll change week to week, but that the way that game flowed, I thought he played really disciplined, which is why he had an efficient day.
Did you campaign for fourth and down, go for it?
Well, it's all those. We had talked about it. That's the one thing that a lot of that goes on through the week and what you train in camp and, you know, running the ball well. Credit to Atlanta and really Landman. I mean, he came flying over the top. And, you know, you're 6 inches away from, if he doesn't time that up, Justin rolls out the back. But that's the name of the game in the NFL. He made a play. Obviously, you know, you go back in hindsight, you wish you'd called something different. But that's every week. You know, you don't want to have too many. You say, oh, I wish I hadn't called it. But you got to look at yourself objectively. So there's a lot went into that. Yeah, I mean, I thought the biggest play that we made in the run game was the third down on the quarterback counter, because that kind of really sealed the deal.
The 12-yarder?
Yeah, the one that in motion CP out. He followed Connor. It was Spence, but Connor made a great play too, and you got him 1-on-1 with the safety there, and he finished it. I mean, that's Justin's hard to tackle in open field, and that's another weapon, but that was a critical play.
Very interesting stuff. He lost me at one point with one of those explanations. But, man, you heard Chris Hoke earlier today talk about how Mike Tomlin really likes what Justin Fields brings and has been wanting a quarterback like this. And what you just heard, those things aren't really available with Russell Wilson, although Russell still moves around pretty well. But I think Arthur Smith is rather enamored with the possibilities as well. With Justin Fields. And Hokie's right. Tomlin has long coveted this kind of quarterback.
Well, and it's definitely not available now with the state of Wilson and his calf injury. And he's been throwing in, yesterday he threw in basically individual sessions, took a couple steps, a couple dropbacks, nothing really too extreme in terms of working overall with the team, 11-on-11 or anything like that. And I mean, I really do wonder the current state of Russell Wilson's health. Because we're told one thing, what's actually true, how bad really is it from a doctor's perspective compared to Wilson's perspective of, yeah, it hurts a little bit, but did the doctor see something different? That's why Fields also is getting the nod, I think, and the dimension is there. It's something that the Steelers really haven't had in a long time. When was the last time they had a quarterback that could run around like this?
Man, not many have had a guy like this in terms of running. Like, that's a big body that can move, that can make people miss. So, if he plays well in Denver, I'm with Hokie and a lot of other people that I think no matter what kind of shape Russell Wilson's in the next week, even if he's 100%, I think you see Fields again. I truly do. But Arthur Smith, as a whole there, I thought came off pretty well. I do. Gave his explanations on why things didn't work. Implicated some people and some things that didn't work. So what? I want to hear an honest opinion from the offensive coordinator. Why didn't that play work? And if that means this guy didn't get the block, Fields didn't time the throw properly, which is what he talked about on that little wide receiver screen, whatever you want to call it, that just blew up with Calvin Austin as a lead blocker. He blamed it on not himself.
Do you think there's a bottom line benchmark for a stat line that Fields has to have in this game to remain the starter?
No, I think we'll know it when we see it. Or it could be just a win again where he plays at least this. Let's say he plays virtually the same way and they win again. I still think he plays.
I wouldn't be convinced. I'm not convinced of that if he plays the same way because I think he played fine. But again, they did not score a touchdown. He was effective in the run game. He has to. Okay, defense. Denver's defense is fine. I think he has to further exceed some expectations. He has to be better than what he did last game. If he throws a couple touchdown passes, no interceptions, takes care of the ball, then yes. And a big part of that is not turning the ball over.
Well, that's the other part.
He didn't do.
Right. He doesn't turn the ball over. He makes key plays late, like, you know, converting a 3rd-and-7 on a design quarterback run. He delivers 60 yards or so in the run game, makes a couple big plays. Has good third down conversion percentage, and they win. then it becomes very, 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 very interesting. And Mike Tomlin maybe intentionally has kept this idea alive that this was very close all along. You know, maybe intentionally he kept that idea alive. You remember when he finally announced Russell as a starter, he said it was a very difficult decision. We ripped him for it. Like, no, it wasn't. This was the way it was all along. Maybe he was very calculated in how he worded that, so it didn't appear like Russell was the clear-cut, by far, favorite here. It was really close, Tomlin said. And now we've won a couple games. We're 2-0. No turnovers. Some big plays with his feet. I told you guys it was close. And now we're off to 2-0 start. Playing pretty well. We're going to stay with it. I mean, we have a very recent example of a guy, a quarterback, losing his job to injury because the other guy played better or played well. We don't have anything to judge Russell Wilson by yet, but played well. And that was Mason Rudolph. And I know he played really well in a couple of those games, like tons of touchdown passes and things like that. But I mean, one of those was against Cincinnati's broken defense, right? The other one was against Seattle's low-ranked defense. So I do think it's instructive to note that Mike Tomlin has in his very recent history a willingness to go with the hot hand over the presumed starter. Ben Roethlisberger doesn't play here anymore. There is no star here. There is no star to have allegiance to. He's got no history at all, in fact, with Russell Wilson, and they're paying him nothing. So they have no financial stake in the game either, which is why if you're Russell Wilson, you believe... I believe the report from Schefter that he wanted to play last week, and you better believe he wants to play this week because he can see, if we all are watching it and seeing it unfold, and if Chris Hoke is making that observation and people around the country who played football are making that observation, that if Fields keeps doing this, even not great play, but just good and different from what the Steelers have had recently, then he's going to keep playing. You don't think Russell Wilson thinks that too?
This is a mini Super Bowl for Russell Wilson going back to Denver and playing in this game. Because his legacy in Seattle is Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, truly should be two-time Super Bowl champion if Pete Carroll would have just ran the damn ball. And a guy who is a Walter Payton Man of the Year, good legacy, first ballot Hall of Famer, then he goes to Denver and now questions. Was Russell Wilson really that good or was it the defense? How good really is he? Is his legacy tarnished a little bit by going to another team, getting this huge contract before he plays one snap and is done? So he wants to stick it to that team that gave him the big deal, did not decide to stick with him, went with Jared Stidham, who was benched for Bo Nix to start the year. There's got to be a lot of bad blood for Russell Wilson with Denver.
No, he desperately wants to play in this game.
He does.
I would imagine.
It's just how healthy is his body? And is his body going to hold up? Is this the beginning of the end for him physically? And I think that's one thing that I was worried about coming into the season. How will his body hold up? Because, yes, Tom Brady with his kale shakes and weird diet made it all the way to 44, but not everybody's cut from the same cloth. And we saw Ben Roethlisberger over the last couple years of his career not be the same player. Still effective. But will the same, because mobility is a huge part of Russell Wilson's game, and the calf injury hampers that, is it the same if you put Wilson out there compared to Fields right now, is it the same competitive advantage? And I don't think it is.